This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And it is a glorious day today, and I hope tomorrow, because my goddaughter, Kanisha, is getting married tomorrow. And we were just all praying that this storm that was headed our way would turn, and it looks like it has, and we're keeping our fingers crossed because she's having a beach wedding. Well, what else can you do nowadays? You have to get married outside. And I did once. Yes, I had one. I was married three times, but I was one of them was outside. Now, I will add that all three weddings were to the same man. But our second one was actually outside, and that was on a hill, and it was very, very beautiful. So we're hoping that tomorrow will be absolutely gorgeous, because Kanisha is so beautiful, and I had so much fun helping her pick out her wedding dress. So this is going to be a great day tomorrow. And she is really a gift from God, because she is my adopted goddaughter, and I met her because of this radio program. And it is one of the many wonderful things that has happened since I started this radio program over 5 years ago. Many, many magical threads build the tapestry to this program. And Kanisha is certainly one of the golden ones. She was at my very, very first speech when I was terrified and I didn't know what I was going to do. But there she was, smiling. And we've been friends ever since, and I just had to adopt her. She's my goddaughter. So this is really exciting. In a little while, I have a wonderful author who's joining me today, Ken Pelham. And his books are I love all of his books, sci-fi, mostly sci-fi. But he has written a book called Great Danger, and it's called The Writer's Guide to Building Suspense. It is such a fantastic little book. I'm holding it up to the camera for those of you on YouTube. I mean, it's a little tiny book. There is more info in this little tiny book than some of the books that you buy on writing, and at the end, you don't know anything. So I'm so excited that Ken is going to be joining me in a little while. But first, I want to do a couple of things, sort of catch up. I managed to say hello and good luck to my goddaughter. I want to say hello to my son, who's also just doing just so well now that, you know, we're sort of all this pandemic-y thing is, I don't know, it's not over, but it's been a strain. And his school was disrupted. Everything was disrupted in our lives. And I just want to say a special hello to him. And then I want to do something. This is actually by popular demand, because a while back, a wonderful guy named Giuseppe sent me this song. It's from somebody he represents. And I was so impressed with the song. I played it on the program. And I have had so many wonderful compliments about her song, and so we're just going to see if we can find it. And it's by Haley Woolbright.
Do we have the name of it?
Haley Woolbright.
Name of the song?
Do I have the name of the song? I don't have the name of the song. We played it 2 weeks ago. It's in an email to you. Well, Ed will find it. Ed will find it. I will keep talking. It doesn't matter. Ed will find it. Well, as a matter of fact, let's play. Can we play Jim Lamb's number one poem? Okay, we're going to play that while we are waiting to find Haley's song.
Squiggles on Paper by J.S. Lamb. Words and numbers on a page, writ in love or burning rage, gurgling, burgling through our brains, happy, sad, pleasure, pain. Feelings slide through pencils, pens, rhyming, chiming now and then. Who brings these squiggles to our eyes? Friends with nimble lows and highs.
Now, isn't that nice? Squiggles on a page. So, you know what I tell all of you? Well, start writing. You don't have to write a book. You don't have to write a short story. You might just start putting squiggles on a page, like Jim Lamb says, and you never know, you might land up with a really wonderful song. And so, writing can take many forms, and of course, poetry is one of them. And Jim Lamb is a wonderful poet, and I hope that you would all go to read some of his poetry. You will find that there is a poem in there that will just suit your personality just perfectly. And his poetry is available at www.theprose.com, theprose.com, all one word, and /Jim Lamb. And he has a lot of wonderful poems there, and they're just enjoyable. And he's living proof that you can write, if you write from your heart, something that means something to you, you can turn it into a poem, maybe later on a book. You don't know, but you have to try. And every veteran in every war, Jim did what he could to survive. And he also wrote a book about that. And it's called Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales. And it's a collection of Jim's stories about his time in Vietnam, where he worked on electronic gear for the U.S. Navy. And some of his stories are funny and some of them are sad, but all of them are fascinating. And that book, Orange Socks and Other Colorful Tales, is available on Amazon. So check it out, and I think you will really enjoy it. And meanwhile, we'll see. I don't know if we have. Do we have it? We have Haley's song. I want to play it because so many of you wrote to me and said, wow, that's a way to start the day. So let's listen to this. And here, she's got some great squiggles on a page.
Been stowed away on this boxcar for quite some time. We plan to ride it. Company's gone. I could choose to step off and make my way back home, or I could choose to keep moving on. My time is come and gone. Maybe I'll stay my welcome, but I've outgrown this boxcar and I'm headed down the with no remorse. My time is
Isn't that nice? I love that song. It is so cool. And she has an album. And I sent a message to Giuseppe. I said, Giuseppe, I need to have Haley on the program because she just has, I think she has a great sound. I'd love to learn more about how this song was written. And
for those that want to know, the name of the song is Boxcar.
Boxcar. Yes. Boxcar. Thank you. Big Ed, I knew it, but yeah, you're right. We have to say it. It's called Boxcar, and it's part of a wonderful album that she's done. And it's called, and she is called Haley Woolbridge. And I'm just going to have her on. I'm going to arrange with Giuseppe. We're going to have her here on the program so we can find out more about this girl.
She is on YouTube, too, and her other songs.
Yeah? Okay. Well, there, everybody. You can go and check her out there, and we'll get her on Joy on Paper because I enjoy her music, and it's inspired me. I am going to start I'm going to start playing the guitar again. You know, Lee Child was on last week. It was his birthday, and we were talking about, you know, all the things that he's going to do now that he has passed the baton of Jack Reacher to his brother. And so now Andrew Child, or as all of you know, him on this program, Drew, is taking over for Lee. And one of the things that Lee Child is going to be doing now that he's retiring is going back and improving his guitar playing. And so I thought, well, if Lee Child can do it, I'm not going to retire, but I'm going to maybe improve because I was really inspired here by Haley. So we're going to do that, and I'm going to make sure that, you know, when I get really good, I'll do a duet with her maybe. But one of the things is that this is the whole thing that I'm telling you. It was somebody squiggled this on a page. Somebody was sitting there somewhere, maybe in a coffee shop, and they wrote down the words, and they just said, oh, those words, you know, boxcar. First of all, I'd love to know if anybody's actually on a boxcar anymore. Probably not. Probably it's a dream of people because you can't go on a boxcar today. I'm sure you would get picked up by Homeland Security or something or the other. But it's a nice idea. The concept is great. I really enjoy listening to the song. And so we'll have her on and we can learn out some more about that. And but meanwhile, I'm going to just take a quick commercial break, I think. And but I want to play a promo. Now, this is a book. This is a sci-fi book written by a great supporter of Joy on Paper, Glenn Erickson. And he has written I love it. It's called Android Love. It's a sci-fi book. We've done a little promo for him. We'll do that and then a few commercials. And then I will be back with Ken Pelham. And he is amazing. And he has created a cliffhanger for me. And I have to talk to him about it. So let's play Glenn's promo.
From the pen of local storyteller Glenn Erickson comes a tale of romance and suspense. A truck driver encounters a beautiful woman fleeing in the night. Why is she running? Who is she running from? When Richard stops to help her, he has no idea his life is about to change. His quiet life as a widower is turned upside down when he discovers that Marie, as she calls herself, is really an advanced android, one who not only has escaped those who created her, but who has become self-aware. She wants to be free. She wants to live. Can Richard protect her from the corporation that claims her as their property to do what they want with her? Will Marie be able to find justice before she's captured by a bounty hunter? Android Love is a new type of love story. Does an android have the right to feel love? To form an unshakable bond with a human that defies logic? The story of Richard and Marie will touch your heart and get you thinking about the world of the future. Are we prepared? Android Love, written by author and storyteller Glenn Erickson, is available on Amazon KDP.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I am back with a very special guest. I have been trying to get him on, and he is harder to book than Stephen King, I think. I am so happy he's not on yet. Oh, my goodness. I am going to go crazy. You know, this is so funny. I can talk about anything now. So while we're doing that, oh, no, I have one more song. We're talking about songwriters. Let's play my favorite from Lang Martin Jr., because he's been on the program how many times? 4 or 5 times at least. And he is a great fan of Joy on Paper. So we're going to play Lang Martin's, one of my favorite songs.
Lay beside me on the sand.
One of my favorite songs, and from Lang Martin Jr., and his book is called Permission to Fly. It is a very touching book about a tragedy that he has turned into a lifetime of joy, and it's called Permission to Fly. It's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, wherever. And do we have Ken now? And okay, well,
yes.
Ken, hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Patsy, how are you?
Okay. Well, I am so happy to welcome Ken Pelham to Joy on Paper because, as I was telling my listeners earlier, it's really hard to get you. I think I might have more luck to get Stephen King. But I'm happy that you're finally on because you are, well, first of all, I've always loved sci-fi. So you are like a genius in sci-fi and also in thrillers. And then, of course, you write about writing. I think your books about writing are the clearest and easiest books to understand. And one of the books that I want to particularly talk to you about today is Great Danger. and it's called A Writer's Guide to Build Suspense. So A Writer's Guide to Build Suspense is a book that I think every author should have on right next to their desk, because it just reminds you of all the things you have to do to create a really exciting story.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, very much. And I agree with every word.
Well, you know, we'll talk a little bit in a minute about the book, but let's just mention, why don't you tell us the latest in your sort of sci-fi world? One of the ones that I just recently read was the Medusa Jump, and that's one of the Masters Reimagined books. And I love this series of the Masters Reimagined. Of course, Bria Burton was on a few weeks ago to talk about her contribution to this. Can you explain this series and what maybe some of the people involved and about your particular story?
Certainly. Well, 5 or 6 years ago, we myself and another writer decided to form this little group of writers, and we call it the Alvarium Experiment. Alvarium being Latin for beehive, apparently. So we decided to try to do an anthology of stories every year. And I think the third in the series that we did was called The Masters Reimagined. And in that one, we took classic works of literature and gave each author the freedom to interpret that however they want, in a speculative genre, and that being either science fiction or fantasy or horror or something blended along those lines. So we really enjoyed doing that, and so we decided to revisit the whole idea of the Masters Reimagined again, and then came up with a second premise, and that being to take the same approach with classic works of art. And as you mentioned, Bria Burton, in her story, she took a look at the Mona Lisa. Charles Cornell looked at doing the Scream, which is the famous Norwegian painting. What I decided to do, having visited the Louvre in Paris many years ago, I was wowed when I entered the French Romanticism Gallery and saw the work by Theodore Gerico called The Raft of the Medusa, and it's a gargantuan painting. If you've ever been to the Louvre, I mean, it dominates the whole wall. It's some 16 feet high and about 24 feet wide. It's truly larger than life. And I was floored by it when I saw it in person. So when we came to the premise to take a speculative look at great works of art, I immediately settled on that one as to what I wanted to do. So anyway, the story starts with a young woman who is getting ready for a job interview at the Louvre and is visited by a stranger, and he starts to tell her this story, and you know, and she doesn't believe him, of course, but he says that he's a visitor from the year 2367 and was actually there at the creation of this painting by Gerico. The painting is based on a true life incident, the sinking of a frigate, French frigate, called the Medusa, which was on its way to Senegal to help them reestablish the French colony there in Senegal. And it was, you know, this was at a time after the French Revolution and during the restoration of the monarchy. And so France was at odds with itself. I mean, it was coming apart. So this tragedy, you know, came about by people being appointed to the wrong jobs. The captain of the frigate had not been to sea in something like 20 years. Anyway, they ran aground on Senegal on a reef there in the shallows that any seasoned captain would have known to stay well away from it. Anyway, they ran aground and they started to disassemble many parts of the ship to build a raft. And the raft carried over 100 people. There were some 400 people on the ship itself. So a lot of them were able to get away from the ship in the boats, and they were going to row to the coast and tow the raft behind them. Well, one thing led to another, and that turned into a major disaster, and it became a major political disaster for the restored monarchs back in France. But that was the story behind the story here. So I had these two visitors from 2367. One is an art historian, and he comes with his father back to to see the creation of this painting, and they did not intend to get so wrapped up in it, but bad things happened. So I'll leave it at that.
Yes, yes. Well, of course, I spent a lot of time in Europe, and I spent many, many days, not hours, days and days and days in the Louvre. And so I've seen this magnificent painting, and it's just, I love what you guys have done with this series. I think it's so clever, and it will, I think, open people's eyes to art in general. Sometimes people don't realize, you know, they hear names and they don't quite connect. But these stories will really, I think people will read the stories and they will want to go and look at the art. And then someday in the future when we can all travel again, people will actually go to Paris and see, of course, this fantastic painting. As you say, it's enormous. And it's called The Raft of the Medusa. And you might even see the Mona Lisa if you're willing to stand in line for hours. And hours.
There are actually, in the eight stories that were in the anthology, three of them are in the three of the artworks are in the Louvre. There's the Winged Victory of Samothrace, which was an ancient Greek sculpture statue that's featured in one of the other stories too. And then in Bria's story, the Mona Lisa, and then Raft of the Medusa.
You know, Ken, we're getting a little bit of a reverb or something, right? Ed, something, is your phone on speaker or off speaker?
I've got it on speaker. I can take it off.
Yeah, I think you better take it off a speaker. It's a
okay.
Little. I know sometimes that happens with the phones because I want everybody to be able to hear the next part of our talk very clearly because I just want to, before we go into Great Danger, I want to add, I don't know how many prizes you've won, but I do want to tell people that I know that Brigand's Key, which is a wonderful book, won the first place of the Florida Writers Association's Royal Palm Literary Awards, and that's back in, I think, 2012. And
yes.
How many other prizes have you won? A lot, I think.
I think eight total. The prequel to Brigand's Key won a prize for best thriller also, and a couple of my short stories have won awards, and then I've won some awards for some short nonfiction that I've done.
Well, you are an award-winning author. Your writing is fantastic, and as I said, I have always loved sci-fi, and I love this group of people that you have put together. You have put together a wonderful group, and I hope that soon you guys can come back to the studio because it was so much fun to have you all here in the studio.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
You know, and I have coined a new phrase, and I'm trying to have people send a message to the Oxford English Dictionary. I have combined pandemic with icky. So I am now calling this 2020 is a pandicky year. And so if you want, just send them a little text or email and say, okay, Patsy with a Z has created a new word because we need a word. It's just so pandicky. It is really so icky, icky, icky. I thought it worked out. What do you think?
I love it. I think you should copyright that word.
That's right.
Trademark it.
That's I should. Trademark. Pandicky. Oh, yeah, we can make T-shirts. 2020, the pandicky year. Wow. Okay, somebody steal it. I don't have the time or energy to do it. I don't care if you steal it, but make the T-shirts and just put my name, Patsy, with a Z. Because now we're going to talk about something really important, writing. You know, during this period, ever since it started, well, I've always encouraged people to write, but a lot of people have taken it to heart. And so during this pandicky time, many people have contacted me and said, well, finally, Patsy, I'm listening to you. I'm actually writing. And it, of course, thrills me. And so I will get those emails. And then a few weeks later, maybe a month later, I will get an email saying, I started, but I don't know if I can do it. And then I encourage them. And then who knew it was going to be so many months? Some of them have finished their darn book already. I mean, this is, And none of them, I don't think, well, none of them had the wonderful book that you have written called Great Danger. And this is such a good book. It is so, it's so easy to read, so interesting, and it leaves me with a cliffhanger, and it's driving me crazy. And this book is called The Writer's Guide to Building Suspense. At the very back of the book, you give an example of how to make a story more exciting, how to build up the suspense, how to, and you use a really nice little storyline. You come out with this storyline, and it's all, you know, all about Caroline and what she's doing. So you give the sample of, you know, writing about Caroline when it's not that interesting, and then you give an example of how to make it really interesting, and then you stop. And I'm left like, what in the heck it happened to Caroline? So you have to now write a story called What in the Heck Happened to Caroline? Because it's driving me crazy. I need to know. And anybody, when you get this book, you will say, wow, there's so much in here that you didn't understand and didn't know about suspense. And so we're going to start right at the beginning. Talk about suspense and talk about, I love the chapter, The Paradox of Suspense. I love Hitchcock on suspense. I love the mystery versus suspense versus thriller. This book is fantastic.
Well, thank you. And there's, I tried to organize it in two sections. Part one, which is understanding suspense, and the second part is the nuts and bolts of it, building suspense. But in the first part, understanding suspense, I just talked about, you know, what is it? It's related to fear, and I talk a little bit about the, you know, where we get fear. It originates in a part of the brain, the amygdala, and they've determined this through research, you know, through studying, you know, people with damage to that parts of the brain and, you know, how they react to fear, and then have seen how animals react to fear that have suffered brain damage. Anyway, it's all related to suspense is related to fear, and the paradox that I talk about is, well, you know, why is that fun? It's you know, nobody wants to be afraid, but you know, it's in fiction, it's great, you know. So the paradox of suspense, you know, I use Apollo 13, the movie, as an example. You know, we know exactly, you know, most of us know the story. It's a true life story, and I recall it when I was a teenager. You know, the actual events happening, and I didn't realize from the news accounts at the time how serious the situation really was until later. But, you know, the whole world was kind of glued to it to see if these astronauts would return home alive. And, you know, I've seen the movie probably half a dozen times, and I read the book it's based on, and every time I'm sucked into the story because it's such good storytelling, and I'm, you know, praying that they all get home alive, and I know that they do. But, you know, that's part of the paradox of suspense. It's fine, you know, it's to read something like that. It's not something you want to necessarily live through, but, you know, it really breathes life in any storytelling. And Hitchcock, of course, understood this very well, and he was always more in tune with suspense than he was actually putting out whodunits and, you know, clue-solving, things like that. He was focused in on suspense, and you'll see it in a lot of his movies, The Birds. There's a long, drawn-out scene in which Tippi Hedren is waiting inside the schoolyard, waiting for the children to finish singing this really annoying song that goes on and on. Meanwhile, all the birds, all the crows are gathering on the wires, and the monkey bar is right behind her. She's totally unaware until she slowly sees one land there. Only the viewer can see this, so that's his whole point. The viewer sees what's going on. Characters don't necessarily, so... he really knew how to wring suspense out of a scene.
Oh, I love that scene. I love that scene. And I've seen it many times, and every time I get that same feeling.
I think it's one of my favorite scenes in all of movies, so I encourage everyone to see it. The paradox of suspense and understanding suspense, it's, fear is built into our nature. A lot of people claim they're not afraid of anything, and I basically say, you know, unless you've had brain damage, you probably are afraid of lots of things. And that's not a bad thing to say. You know, fear is what has kept us alive as a species for millions of years. So You can't get around that. You know, it's built into us to for preservation, and you know that's why we feel fear, and you know that's why we can play on that in fiction to create suspense.
And
it's hardwired into us.
It is, and it's there is a difference though between mystery and suspense and a thriller. Mm-hmm. What is that?
Well, mystery, of course, the classic mystery is a. You know, the Sherlock Holmes, Agatha Christie, things like that, Dorothy Sayers, those are built on whodunits. And there's a level of suspense in that, you know, trying to figure out the puzzle. Now, suspense, as I was listening with Hitchcock, you know, he takes a different approach. It's not so much as the more modern and muted suspense of the whodunit. It's more of the danger suspense that he builds upon. And then the thriller... takes that even further and really introduces usually extreme danger and elements of time, you know, so that I guess the key difference is between a thriller and any mystery. With a mystery, you're trying to solve who the perpetrator is over the course of the story. You might know in a thriller that from the very first sentence, you know, who done it. So the question becomes, why did they do it? And are they going to get away with it? So there's usually competing agendas and a lot of times more characters in a thriller. So they're just different ways of going about this. So I believe all stories, all fiction should have suspense built in, you know, which is comes out of conflict. If you don't have a conflict, you don't have a story. So since I write across a lot of genres, like you said, the Medusa Jump is a science fiction story, but I try to wring the suspense out of it with using the same tricks that I use in thrillers and in mystery stories. So hopefully I'm successful at that, but, you know, and a lot of that's, you know, just tips and techniques that you can learn and that I've learned over the years from reading authors like Ken Follett or Stephen King, people like that, you know, kind of boil down what they're trying to pull, you know, and they're very good at it. So, you know, always learn from the masters.
That's it, and you can learn so much. And I'm sure that even, for example, in this most recent story that you did, there was a lot. There's research that goes into it. So in this book, you talk about the importance of research.
Because in any story, whether it's a thriller or a mystery or a romance, you're trying to keep the reader in the story, engaged in the story. Now, you could probably get away with doing minimal research in a lot of things, but if you're talking about, you know, this or that type of engine or boat or weapon or anything like that, there's experts out there that will know right away. You want to keep every reader engaged, you know, and I've read things where it was a pretty good story, but I kept getting bumped out of the story because I could see all these factual mistakes that an author was making, you know.
That's so annoying to me. I try to overcome it. I try to overlook it. Now, one of my problems, of course, is I've lived all over the world. I've traveled. I've been mm-hmm. to these places. And oftentimes, unfortunately, a lot of people think that it's just good enough to Google mm-hmm. something, but they don't. They haven't actually ever been any place. And I catch quite a bit of that. I also catch quite often when it comes to guns, because as somebody who slept with an Uzi under my bed for 30 years, I sort of know guns, and so I catch these things, and it is really annoying.
Correct. Yes. And you can get away with it, like I said, a lot of times. You know, majority of the readers probably not going to catch it, but there will be a percentage that are going to know that you don't really know what you're writing about, do you? So, and obviously, you know, I've never sailed on an 18th century frigate from France to Senegal, but, you know, I tried to do the research to, you know, to fill in gaps and banking on that the fact that nobody else has done that either. But, you know, I've done a little bit of sailing, very little, but enough to know, you know, how sailboats work. So, you know, I was able to fake my way through something like that. But, yeah, I always encourage people to do research, get their facts as straight as they can. You know, the reader will grant you a little bit of leeway sometimes, but every time they catch something, that bumps them out of the flow of the story a little bit. So those are the things, putting a thumb on the fan belt of suspense, you know, slowing it down. So you want to avoid that as a practice.
Well, and if particularly for crime fiction, if you're writing crime fiction and you are not involved at all and you have no, you know, previous knowledge yourself, you really have to make yourself a friend in whatever field you're, you know, in the police department, or if you're doing something about a pathologist, make friends so that they can help you. Because one of the worst things that can happen, and this happens quite often, people are nitpicking, and they will give you a one-star review on Amazon because you get, you know, you can't tell the difference between a Colt and you know, a Beretta, or and they will do one stars, and that can really take your ratings down. I know one author who made some really serious mistakes to do with the police department procedure, and oh boy, he got so many one-star reviews, and that's not good.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. I'm, you know, there's going to be areas that I write about that I really know nothing about. So when I'm in that predicament, like in Brigham's Key, I corresponded with a couple of medical examiner's offices, you know, as I was writing it, to say, all right, how would this be done? And is this plausible, you know, to get their thumbs up and say, yeah, that's reasonably close, yeah. And things like that. And with a short story I wrote called The Wreck of the Edinburgh Kate, which takes place in the late 1800s, it's amazing what you can find on the internet. I found sort of the leading expert on 19th century maritime salvage law. You know, so I sent emails back and forth to him and had him read the story, and he pointed out errors and things like that. So it's amazing the masters of such arcane knowledge that are out there, but they are out there, and most of them are willing to help.
And it's a wonderful, you know, we always talk about being an author is a solitary thing, and it is. It's true that you spend a lot of time by yourself writing, but part of the joy of writing is this opportunity to meet experts, to meet other people, of course, to meet fans. But I know many people who have, one of them, Brooke Ellen, for example, she wanted to write about Rome. And so she started traveling. Then she started picking up experts along the way. And she now has so many friends. She can travel all over the world. And I think in every town she goes to, there's somebody there who's an expert on Roman history. Mm-hmm. So she has friends. So it's no longer, being a writer is no longer a solitary thing. It is, it really opens doors for you.
And another thing I talk about in the research section of this book is to, you know, we can write from personal experience too, and I've done that too. And I wrote a short story, and mentioned a couple of songs from the era. And then I thought, you know, I better check that. I'm just going by my own memory of that approximate time. So looking up these songs again online, I said, oh, you know, that wasn't released until like 4 months after I'd written this, you know, set the story. So choose another song. So. Yeah, you have to always double check, I think.
Exactly. Now, there's so much in this book. I can't cover it all in a half an hour, so you're going to have to come back. You realize that.
But, okay.
Okay. But I want to talk about giving an antagonist complexities, because this is really important. And I've had quite a few really best-selling authors who have written the bad guy is not. Has no depth to him, or
right,
her.
Right. I think the example I'm using in this book, one of my favorite thrillers is The Eye of the Needle by Ken Follett, and it's a World War II espionage story. There's a German agent embedded in England, and his code name is D. Nidal, or The Needle, hence the name of the book, The Eye of the Needle. Anyway, he stumbles across, you know, a colossal, basically a great diversion that's been created by the Allies, a fake army and air force located in eastern England to set up the ruse that, you know, the invasion of Europe is going to come from that point He's there and he sees it. Uh-oh, this is, you know, my master's back in Berlin, have it all wrong. So he's determined to get that secret out. It means he has to escape entry right away. Well, meanwhile, the British agents have found that he has found this, and now they're in a life or death race to chase him across the country. So he can't escape with this, because if he does, it would put the whole invasion of Normandy at risk, and they obviously can't have that. So, but, you know, and the Needle, and I can't recall his given name in the book, but he's ruthless in the pursuit of, you know, what he perceives as his patriotic duty. I mean, he'll kill you without thinking twice about it. But he's also, you know, he regrets doing these things, and he doesn't kill wantonly. You know, he just does it as, you know, he feels this is his duty. He's got to get out, you know, and whether the person he has to kill is an innocent person or not, you know, that's the cost of the war. So, you know, this is...
Well, he has depth. You know, he has depth, and that's why that's why it's a story that will last, you know, a long time, because people can go back and read it, because it's fascinating. It's not one dimensional, and
right. And the characters in the Germans in The Eagles Has Landed are similar. They're you know, they have their own agendas, and they in the book they. Land a group in England to the idea of kidnapping Winston Churchill. Well, you know, things go wrong. There, everything is going very well until, you know, a little girl, an English girl, falls into the river and is about to drown. So one of the Germans leaps in and saves her. You know, because he, you know, because he's not a horrible person. This is what, you know, what you do. Well, of course, that throws their whole mission in jeopardy. Now their cover is blown, and, you know, that's part of what goes on in that story.
Well, you know, Ken, we're running out of time, but I want to do one more just for all of the people out there who are writing, and many people are now writing during NaNoWriMo. They're in the middle of their 50,000-word novel, and I wanted to talk about just one more area. Vary the sentence and paragraph lengths. Why is that important?
Well, I found, in building suspense, and the really best ones, you want to look at the macro and the micro. You need a structure, an architecture of the overall story that's got suspense built into it. And then you zip down to the micro, and that's where we get more into varying chapter length, paragraph length, and sentence length. And you can apply these things just to change the feel of the narrative as it goes forward. You know, to speed up the narrative, the pace of the story, and as you do that, at least in thrillers, you know, really, it builds in another level of suspense. Now you've gotten down from the overall suspenseful architecture of the story down to applying little tips and techniques to really highlight that as you go through it. So that's what that is all about. You can, I think, the story that I mentioned already, the Wreck of the Edinburgh Kate, I mentioned also in this book that, and how I did this. To highlight tension as you reach a key point in the story. Just a paragraph gets shorter, and then the next one shorter, and then the next one shorter. So,
and Bill's excited.
So it's a trick. You can't go to that well every time, but you know, it's one of those things that you can use in your tool bag.
Well, where can people find out more about you and more about your other writing books? Because this is not the only one you have. And mention the other books and where they can find you.
Right, I've got the other pamphlet I've done is Out of Sight, Out of Mind, A Writer's Guide to Mastering Viewpoint, and that is just what it sounds like, writing in a fictional point of view and how to do it consistently without getting out of that character's point of view. And this is a mistake that a lot of beginning writers make, so that's the point of that. Both of these books are very short, less than 60 pages or so, so they're... I tried to put as much info in as short a period in the space as I could for both of these. So that was the genesis of that right there. So I'm working on another book right now. I'm hoping to put the finishing touches on it, another nonfiction. It's called Gumshoes, Fangs, Rockets, and Spies, and it's about the evolution of fictional genres. It's been a labor of love, and hopefully I'll be able to get it out the door soon.
So your webpage is what? Your webpage is just...
KenPelham.com, all written as one word.
KenPelham.com. Ken,
yes.
I want to thank you really so much for being on Joy on Paper today and to tell you that you have to come back because you are... What I love about these books is they are short and sweet. You get to the point. There's not a lot of fluff. You have real live examples here of how something, you know, looks on paper. And it really is, this is a kind of thing that a writer just starting off needs to know. And as I said, in the case of the last story, that you give an example of how the story is written. It's sort of boring, not interesting, nothing. And then you build it up and you change it and you start making it very suspenseful, very exciting. So exciting to the point that I get to the end of the book and I don't know what is going on with Caroline. So I am hoping that you will now write a story called What the Heck Happened to Caroline? And you can dedicate it to Patsy with a Z because I am a great admirer of yours. I think you are a fantastic author. And everyone, get this book. You really want to have it next to you. Great Danger. It's wonderful. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you so much for having me on, and I'll work on that story.
Okay, you do that. Okay. Bye-bye now, Ken. Ken
Bye-bye.
Pelham. Wow, wonderful. What a guy. I'm thrilled. This was wonderful. It went too fast. It went too fast. What can I say? Do get this book. Really, this is the way a writing book should be written. Not a lot of fluff. You don't need fluff. You need details. You need actual suggestions how to improve your writing. And this little book, it's better than... I've got writing books that are 300, 400 pages... And at the end, you don't know anything. This little book, you learn, and you learn fast. Anyway, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or if you're very lucky, a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know if you don't start writing. So start writing today and say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for getting all the songs for me today. And he saluted me, and I'm saluting him because I should have been a general. Oh, gosh, I would just love to boss people around. Okay, everybody, have a great day. Bye-bye now.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.